So let's continue talking about calculus for functions of several variables. On Tuesday, we introduced and discussed a little bit the concept of differentiability. So I recall you that f is differentiable at some point x bar in Rn if there exists a linear function from Rn to R such that given any v in Rn, f at x bar plus v can be approximated by f at x bar plus the linear function evaluated at v, and we have a residual, let me call it r, which depends on f and x bar as a function of v, and we know that the residual function is such that the ratio between the function evaluated at v and the norm of v goes to zero as the norm of v goes to zero. This means that this approximation, taking away the residual, is good when v is a small vector. Okay? And the smaller the vector is, the better the approximation is. And we proved that this linear function is given by the gradient, in the sense that the function computed at v is the scalar product of the gradient of f at x bar with v. Okay? So that, actually, we can replace here the linear function with the scalar product of the gradient with v. Okay? This is no longer the definition, but this is known as Taylor's formula. So on Tuesday we stop here. Essentially, Taylor's formula is telling you that if you are near to the point, so v is small, then you can approximate any function with an affine function, linear term plus a constant value. Just take v. Just take v to be some x minus x bar, and we say that this v is a small vector. It's almost zero. It's not zero, but a small vector. Okay. If you take the definition of differentiability or Taylor's formula, you get that f at x is approximately f of x bar plus the scalar product of the gradient of f at x bar with x minus x bar. I just replace v with this expression. Okay? From a geometrical point of view, if you take any x in Rn, so forget that this is a good approximation, just take this part, okay? This gives you the tangent hyperplane. This is an affine hyperplane, okay, which is tangent to the graphic of the function at the given point. So, formally, you take the set of pairs x and these values, which is in Rn plus 1, for all x, and this is the tangent hyperplane to the graphic of f at x bar. Well, maybe it's not needed to say, but I will. The graphic is the set of pairs f x f at x for all x. Okay. This is the graphic of a function. Okay. Easy. N equal 1. This is x. This is f of x. The graphic is this one. Okay? In the two-dimensional space. Generally, n plus 1. Okay? If we manage today, I will show you some picture for n equal 2. Sorry, is that at x bar, actually, since it's a set, should be x bar f at x bar. Okay? So, in one dimension, I'm just saying this, okay? An hyperplane is a line, so I'm saying that if this is f of x, this is f at x bar, where this is x bar, plus the gradient, in this case is f prime of x, times x minus x bar. Okay? This is this line. If n is equal to, the hyperplane is a true plane, okay, in the three-dimensional space where you have the graphic of the function. And here you can see, as closer as you are to x bar, the better the approximation is. If you are very far, there is no actual similarity between this line, the tangent hyperplane, and the graphic of the function. Okay? But, so, in formula, it is this. Very close to the point. Okay? If you go away, the approximation is right. Okay. Now I want to provide you a sufficient criterion for differentiability. Okay? One is that a function is differentiable at a given point. So, we have this theorem, which in Italian is called differenziale totale, but in English book I almost never find the expression total differential. Okay, but so if you check in the design book, you are likely to find it called as Teorema del Differenziale Totale. So let's consider a point x bar, and let's suppose that f has all the partial derivatives at that point, no, sorry, as all the partial derivatives, not only at that point, but at each x in a ball centered in x bar for some radius epsilon. In this way, partial derivatives are defined at least in a neighborhood of the given point, in a ball around the point. Well, in such a way, the functions which assign to each x bar partial derivatives are well defined on this ball. Okay? So you can consider them as a function. You can consider a partial derivative as the function that at each x assigns the value of the corresponding partial derivative. So this is a function. These are functions. And the theorem states that if these functions are continuous, at x bar, then f is differentiable at x bar. So when you have a function that has partial derivatives, and if you consider the partial derivative as functions, it happens that they are continuous, then you are sure that your function f is differentiable at the point. Okay? And clearly, if partial derivatives exist everywhere, and the function are continuous at and as function they are continuous at every point, then the function is differentiable everywhere.
Okay.
I want to show you an example of a function which is continuous, but as partial derivatives, but is not differentiable. Well, clearly it will happen that some of the partial derivatives are not continuous. Otherwise, the theorem says that we cannot build such an example. Once again, the example is in R2. So we have n equal 2. And the function is defined as follows, as function of x1 and x2, it is x1 squared times x2 divided x1 squared plus x2 squared. This obviously, if x1 and x2 is not the zero vector, and we take zero in zero. So if x1, x2 is the vector zero, then the value of the function is zero. So let's consider 0, 0 as our point x bar.
Well, you can prove easily that the function is continuous because whenever you approach to 0, 0,
okay, the numerator goes to 0. Okay. So if x1, x2 are going to 0, x1 squared, x2 goes to 0. Okay. Clearly you have to be a bit careful because you have also that the denominator goes to 0, but this is a square as a function of x1, x2, while here you have a polynomial of third degree. So the numerator wins over the denominator. But the function has all partial derivatives. No, yes, as actually as all the derivatives in each direction. Okay? And we can show it easily. So we take a direction B, D1, D2. Direction means that the norm is 1. And we compute the derivative in the direction D. X bar. So we have to take the limit for t that goes to 0. At the denominator we have t, and here we have f computed. Here we have f computed at x plus time t times d minus f computed at x bar. Okay? This is 0. This is 0 too, so we are actually computing f at points of the kind t times d. So we just substitute here. So we get t squared d1 squared t d2, so that here we actually have t cubed. And below we have, at the denominator, we have t squared times d1 plus d2 squared. Okay? Well, the norm is 1. So, the square of the norm is 1. What is the square of the norm? It's d1 squared plus d2 squared. So, this is 1. We have 3 t cubed here, and at the denominator we have t squared and t. So they go away. So this is exactly, well, this does not depend on t. It's a constant value. So it is d1 squared times d2. Okay? Now it's easy to show that the function is not differentiable. Why? Let's take partial derivatives. So d is the vector 1, 0, and you get the derivative with respect to x1. And which value do you get? Is 1, 0. 1, 0. You get 0. And then you take the derivative with respect to x2, so that the direction is 0, 1. So here you have 0, 1, you have 0 again. Okay? While if d1 and d2 are both non-zero, compact way to write it, okay? The product is not zero. This is different from zero. Okay. But if a function is differentiable, the directional derivative in any direction d at x bar has to be
the scalar product of the gradient with the direction v. We proved it last time, last lecture. Okay? But what is the gradient here? The gradient is the vector whose the components are these two. So the gradient is zero. So this is identically zero in our example. But our directional derivatives are all different from zero. So these are different. So the function cannot be differentiable. Because for differentiable function, this equality holds. While here it's not true. So this function is not differentiable at 0, 0.
Okay? Well,
indeed, if you compute the derivative with respect, for instance, to x1, in a point which is not zero, you can apply the usual rules there, and what you get is 2 times x1 x2 cubed divided x1 squared plus x2 squared all squared. Okay? This is a computation. You can do it. I'm not doing it now, I don't have time to do it. You can do it as an exercise. As an exercise, you can show that this function is not continuous at 0, 0. Hint. Numerator, you have a polynomial, the degree is 4. At the denominator, you have a polynomial whose degree is 4. Okay? So you may get into trouble, and actually get into trouble when you try to make limits for x1 and x2 that goes to 0.
Well, actually, I could show you because, okay, I give you a hint, then you make the computation. Consider this sequence. Xk is the vector whose components are 1 over k and 1 over k. So you're approaching zero on the diagonal of the plane. Okay? This goes to 0, 0. Okay? Compute the derivative at these points. Okay? You will find that the derivative is always 1 half. This derivative. If you replace, here you always get 1 half. So this goes to 0, but the derivative has value 1 half. And in zero, we know it has value zero. So it's not continuous. Okay. Actually, we give a name to function which satisfy the assumptions of the theorem. Okay? We say that, well, a little bit more than the theorem. We say that f is continuously differentiable at x bar if it is differentiable at x bar. No, sorry. It is differentiable at each x in a ball of center x bar in radius epsilon for some
epsilon.
So the function is differentiable on a pool ball centered in x bar. And the partial derivatives are continuous function at x bar. Since it is differentiable, it has partial derivatives. Okay? In all these points. And if you consider the partial derivatives as functions, they are continuous. So the partial derivatives are continuous at x bar. Okay? Clearly, similar definition, a function is continually differentiable on a set if it is continuously differentiable at every point of the set. For continuously differentiable functions, we have another result similar to Taylor's formula, but with no residual. Okay? And it is called the mean value theorem. Which states the following. So you have f, and you suppose it is continuously differentiable, let's say, for simplicity, on the full space Rn. Okay? Actually, you can restrict this a little bit, but the point is the following, that if you're given a point x bar in Rn, then and you are given also V in Rn, such that we can try to evaluate f at x bar plus V, then there exists a number t between 0 and 1 such that f at x bar plus v is exactly equal to f at x bar plus the scalar product between v and the gradient of f computed not at x bar but at x bar plus t times v. Well, it looks nicer than Taylor's formula, and it will be useful sometimes to prove things, but this is a kind of existence result, okay? You know you have a key that provides you the exact value, but you don't know how to compute t. Okay? In the same way that here you have a residual, which has good properties, but you don't know exactly the residual, here you have an exact formula,
But you don't know the exact point at which you have to compute the gradient. You already know this theorem for n equal 1.
Yeah, exactly.
Take n equal 1. This is telling you that f at a point, let's say, let's call it y, is equal f at the point x plus the derivative of f computed at some point x bar, which is between, which belongs to the segment xy or yx, depending on which of the two is smaller, times y minus x. Okay? This is one of the first calculus theorems you see as calculus course and first year of the undergraduate program. This is the corresponding theorem for generic n. Okay? Useful in proofs, but exact formula, but somehow it has the same trouble of Taylor's formula. Here you don't know the residual exactly, here you don't know the exact point at which the gradient should be computed. Is it clear? Questions? Doubts? Okay, let me end this first part on calculus, just giving you some rules to compute derivatives, to compute gradients and derivatives in general. These are so-called chain rules. Because you have the composition of functions, okay? And so you get the result through a chain of computation of gradients and derivatives. So, chain rules. I will provide you two, and they will be enough for us. So, let's consider a function g from Rn to R. And let's suppose that f is differentiable at some point x bar in Rn. Okay? And then we have a function h which goes from R to R. Okay? Here we don't say it is differentiable, it's a function of one variable, so let's just say it has a derivative. Okay? So let's suppose that half h has a derivative at g computed at x bar. Okay? So, if this is true, then the composition between h and g, let's call it f, okay, which is a function that goes from Rn to R and then from R to R, so it is a function from Rn to R, is differentiable at x bar
And we have a formula, a chain formula for the gradient. The gradient of f at x bar is h prime computed at g at x bar times the gradient of g at x bar. Okay? So this looks more difficult than it actually is. But it's not so. If you take n equal 1 and suppose this is your function, okay? This is just saying that you are taking, that you are composing the function that maps x into x squared minus 1 with the function which sends t into t squared, okay? So this is just saying that you compute the derivative of this, which is 2 times t, in this point, and then you compute the derivative of this. So the derivative of this is 2 times t, and t is this value, x squared minus 1, and then you compute the derivative of this, which is 2 times x. Okay? This is taking these things for function from Rn to R composed with function from R to R. Well, the second chain rule is a bit more involved, and then I give it to you, and then I explain why we are interested in this. Okay? Let's suppose we have a function h, so this is the second chain rule, h, which goes from R to Rn. So is actually, you can think it as a collection of n functions of one variable, h1, h2, hn. Each of them goes from R to R, so h goes to Rn. This is just saying that h at t is the vector h1 at t, h2 at t, hn at t. Okay? And each of the components is a function from R to R. And then we have a function g from Rn to R. Okay? And we consider the composition of these two. First we apply h, so we go from R to Rn,
Then we apply G and we go to, from Rn to R, so that the composition goes from R to R, so as a function of one variable.
Okay.
And we want to compute the derivative. So the assumptions are the following. If the function hi from R to R if all the functions have a derivative at some t bar in R,
okay,
and g is differentiable at which point
you have to compute
h at t bar, then the function let's say f, which is the composition of h and g, so which goes from R to R, as a derivative at t bar, and the derivative is the following.
Okay, I made a mistake here, which I have to correct.
Is the following. It's the gradient of g computed at h at t bar, scalar product with the vector h prime of t bar, where h prime at t bar is nothing else but the vector whose components are the derivative of h1 at t bar, and so on, hn, the derivative of hn at t bar.
Okay?
Why are we interested in this?
Because we will generally do stuff like this. We will try to move away from a point, let's say x bar, along a direction. And we want to evaluate a function here.
Okay.
Well, t is our relevant parameter here. X bar and here are fixed. So t is mapped into x bar plus times plus t times d. So this goes from R to Rn. And then we apply f, which goes to Rn to R. So if we consider this as a function of t, is a function of one variable, and we can compute its derivatives from through these formulas. And this will be used often, since most of our algorithms will generate sequences through procedures done in this way. You move away from a point along a direction, and you have to choose a step. Okay?
Subgradient is, it's a bit more complex,
yeah, but
gradient algorithm, exactly. That is one of the things we will be discussing in the next weeks. No, in the next month. Just one final definition, and then we make it, we take a break. Well, we don't need to keep changing words. We may also have function which map Rn into Rm. Okay? So we may have F, which we can consider to be done by M components, which maps Rn into Rm. So each Fi is a function from Rn to R. And you keep a collection of M functions. Okay? So let's suppose that all these functions have partial derivatives. Okay? So the matrix whose rows are the gradients of functions Fi's is called the Jacobian matrix of capital F at a given point X. Okay. If we want to, so since these are columns, then if you want to see the elements, the first row is made this way. The derivative of F will, of F1 with respect to X1 in X. The derivative of X1 with respect to X2 up to the derivative of F1 with respect to Xn. And so on each row up to the derivative of Fm with respect to x1, first element of the last row, and the last element is the derivative of Fm with respect to xn at x. This is a matrix with m rows, one for each function, and m columns, since all these gradients are have n components. Okay? I think that also Professor Bevilacqua will use the Jacobian matrix at some point. Okay, I say we take a 5 minutes break and then we will discuss second order derivatives.